You can see the story of the AI bubble starting to form. Like if you look left and right, like AI crypto tokens are up, Nvidia is up. It's holding up the entire stock market. Nvidia is now the seventh most valuable asset in the world, the fourth largest publicly traded company. And then how does that impact the crypto markets? Because it does.
Bankless Nation, it is a bullish February roll-up, isn't it, David? How you doing, man? Oh, we still have
quiet,
to be quiet?
Quiet all-time
I thought
all-time
that was last week.
No, until all-time highs.
Well, I'm going to have a hard time being quiet because we've got 3K
that's fair. That's
Ether
fair.
This week. All right? So we got to get loud about that, at least on the roll-up.
I think we got 3K like three times this week. We actually don't have it right now. We have $2,990 on the ETH price.
Oh, come on. That counts. That's 3K. Just round that one up.
That is not 3K.
This is the first time ETH hit 3K since April 2022. So that's worth celebrating. Good. David, what else we got?
The Starknet token is out and live. It is trading. So where did we end up with the ranks of the Starknet airdrop in size and addresses and amount of value distributed to people? We're going to talk about that. And then some earning reports, both Coinbase and Nvidia have kind of rocked the street, the Wall Street, that is. And we're going to talk about the implications around the broader market.
Yeah, you call it the street, David. What do they call crypto? Like, what's the crypto equivalent of Wall Street? Do we have like a cool name, like the street?
The chain?
The blockchain?
On the chain? On the chain? I like
on
that.
On the chain?
We got the street and the chain. You're either on street or on chain. Yeah.
We also have Pudgies with their second Walmart round. And this time, they've got some more community participation. This is a big one. Pudgies has been raising up the ranks of NFTs. And David, are points about to become liquid? I want to check in with you because you're covering this today. We're talking about the eigenpoints maybe? Or what points are we talking about?
Yeah, I put out a satirical tweet a while ago saying, hey guys, you know what we should do? We should tokenize points. and that is unironically what we are going to talk about later. That did happen. We have tokenized points. So we're going to get to all of this and more. But first, we're going to talk about SUI and the SUI Basecamp, which is a in-person conference in Paris during Paris Blockchain Week, April 10th through 11th. So if you are interested in a parallelized layer one delegated proof of stake chain, that is the SUI Basecamp might be for you. There is a link in the show notes to get 20% off of your pass to the SUI Basecamp. This is the Move ecosystem for all the devs out there who enjoy Move. SUI is like the spiritual successor to the whole Libra project, now turned into a layer one. And so, especially if you're a dev who's interested in parallelized new VMs that are parallelized, there's a link in the show notes to get started.
That code is SUI-Bankless20. You get 20% off the standard prices there. And thanks to SUI for sponsoring this message for the Bankless Nation. David, you know what? We always, on the roll-up, since the roll-ups have begun, we've always started with the number one asset by market cap. That is Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. We started every single week with Bitcoin first. Then we go to Ethereum, then we go to the rest of the markets. This week, I think we got to do something different. I think we got to switch things up, just celebrate ETH price hitting 3K for the first time since 2022. We got to start
with
Ethereum.
You're really making a big deal out of this.
This is a big deal. I think it's a big deal. So
it's not that big
tell
of a deal.
Us the ETH price. You don't think, you don't think 3K is a big deal?
No, wake me up at 5K.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we like round numbers, but I mean, numbers going up. We're all happy. I'm not making a big deal out of this. I'll make a big deal out of 5K.
Okay. Well, then I'll take this one. Happy 3K, everyone. And
David.
Except for David, apparently, because he wants to wait for his celebration. I'm going to give you some bull post here, David, since you're not going to do it for the Bankless Nation. Last time we hit 3K, here's why I think this is a big deal. Last time we hit 3K was April 2022. We sort of flirted with 3K for the beginning part of all of 2022. And we were sitting on a whole bunch of time bombs at the time that the crypto community didn't know about. Time bomb number one was the Terra collapse. It was right after April. The last time we hit 3K, Terra blew up. And took markets with it. And then we had the death of 3 Hours Capital. Then we had all of the BlockFi, Celsius, CeFi failures. Then we had the Genesis fiasco. Then we had the $10 billion FTX SBF fraud. Okay? This time, the next time we hit 3K, which is now, Hopefully it's we're above at the time you're listening to this. We are sitting on a completely different foundation. None of those things are problems right now. Now, we might have other time bombs that we can't foresee, but it's so early in the cycle.
But those will happen later.
Those will happen later. Right now, we've got tailwinds. We've got L2 hyperacceleration, like just so many L2 chains going on. We've got another episode about L2s coming out on Monday. Restaking yields. Okay, that's actually a narrative that is hitting Ethereum in a big way, ETH the Internet Bond. We've got the ETH ETF. So I'm calling 3K as the floor this cycle, David. I think that this is a lower bound. And I think, like, of course, we'll bob around these numbers for a little bit, maybe in the weeks to come. But this is kind of the new floor, and it feels good. That's why I'm celebrating 3K, David.
I love that you're calling it the 3K floor when we are currently at $2,978.
It's still a floor. It's still going to be a floor this cycle. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, if we if we go up by, you know, to 10K, to 12K, to something else, and we come back down, I don't think we're going to fall below 3K.
You're
going to
say, you're saying the bear market lows of next bear market will be above 3K.
I think so.
Yeah, I feel mean, like that's a safe bet.
Plus or minus whatever, plus or minus 10%, 20%, yeah, something like that. But we're in range. So I don't know. I'm bullish. I'm sorry you didn't come in with the bullish vibes for Ethereum 3K. I was not prepared for that, David.
I'll come in. I'll do my service for this bullish podcast episode with a Bitcoin price, because I'll just like regurgitate some of the bullish Bitcoin observations from Nick Carter. First off, we're at 52. We started the week at $52,000 on the Bitcoin, down 1%. So ETH went up 6% this week. Bitcoin went down 1%, currently at $51,500. And then Nick Carter put out this tweet that I thought was, you know, pretty nice summary of the current state of the Bitcoin landscape. It goes, Bitcoin observations ranked by the most impactful to the least impactful. Number one, ETF flows are beyond the wildest dreams of even the most bullish analysts. Asset managers have barely activated their sales organizations. Hottest ETF launch in history. I kind of talked about this last week, but just like this, the sales arm, the marketing arm of Bitcoin ETF salespeople hasn't even started. So we still have like a sales force behind the Bitcoin ETF incoming. The BitVM appears to be a fundamental step change in Bitcoin tech, enabling optimistic rollups without a soft fork. Explosion of VC dollars being allocated to Bitcoin startups, and particularly layer twos. Ordinals and BRC20 frenzies have created a hot ball of money with a Bitcoin meta, particularly in Asia. And then he has some like long tail stuff, finishing with the halvening is also a thing, I guess, he says. So these are all the reasons why Nick Carter is bullish on Bitcoin.
Yeah, I'll double down on the VC dollars flowing in. I have never seen so many Bitcoin investable projects, like layer twos in particular. It's an absolutely massive investment narrative right now. We did an episode actually with the Bitcoin Dave. So not Bitcoin you, David, Dave. But a literal Bitcoin Dave who's very excited. David Seroy, and he was talking about the BitVM project. So we put that out this week. If you guys want to get caught up on why people are excited about what's going on with Bitcoin, I think that's a great episode. David, let's talk about
an episode with Nick Carter coming out sometime soon, within 10 days.
You guys talked about Bitcoin. It's Nick Carter, so I imagine we talked about Bitcoin a little bit.
Well, we talked actually about the Bitcoin civil war that's going on, because all of the hotball VC dollars that are going around Bitcoin are offending the other side of the Bitcoin cohort, which are the Bitcoin, like they call them the fix the filter camp, because there's a part of the Bitcoin camp that wants to filter out all Bitcoin transactions that have arbitrary data in them.
Are you serious?
If it's beyond just a normal BTC transfer, they don't want it in the mempool.
I thought all camps had something in like alignment and harmony, and that is number go up. And so like this innovation, this building on Bitcoin, doesn't that help number go up use case? Can't everyone get behind that?
The fix the filter camp thinks that monetary maximalism is the best thing to have for Bitcoin. And if you put in arbitrary data into your Bitcoin transactions, you're diluting the monetariness of Bitcoin, is their argument. It's a dumb argument. It's super dumb.
That's very silly. Okay. Well, interesting. That fight's still going on. Tell us about the ratio and then total crypto market cap. So ETH Bitcoin ratio, what are we at in the week?
0.0577 on the up and up in the last week or so, but still low. El Salvador celebrating around 0.075.
Thanks to Kraken for all these charts. As always, thanks, Kraken. You can go check that out at Kraken Pro. How about total crypto market cap?
2.07. So we are making some big leaps in market cap. We're blowing millions of dollars on a week upwards. So, you know, things are starting to accelerate. You know, we're almost we hit the 3 trillion market cap at the peak of last cycle, and we're above 2 right now.
So when are you going to celebrate the market cap? Are you going to wait for $5 trillion for that? You're going to celebrate it
5.
Okay, yeah, no, 5. 5 is Steven's number.
I'll make a note at 3 and I will celebrate at 5.
Okay. Layer 2 beat. Let's do a quick layer 2 update while we're talking about the numbers here. This is a layer 2 beat. This is brought to you by Mantle, a new and up and coming L2 that we enjoy very much. Thanks to Mantle for sponsoring the segment. David, what are some numbers to look at for layer 2s this week?
Yeah, we're pushing almost up to 10 million Ether locked in layer 2s. One part, you know, thanks to Mantle and many of the other newer layer 2s on the scene. Almost $30 billion on layer 2s. And there's a bunch of more layer 2s that are going to come onto mainnet sometime Q2, Q3. And they're going to be very different from the layer 2s that we already know. Starknet is like kind of an example of this, one that's like very technically differentiated. But then there's others like Eclipse and Phoenix and like Blast, I'm starting to come around to, and Scroll and Tyco. Congrats to Scroll. Shout out to Scroll for crossing $100 million when their mainnet was only a few months ago. Congrats, guys. That's pretty cool. And yeah, like all of these have tokens to drop. All of these have like incentives that they haven't even started with. Points to issue, if you will. And so like there's like so much pent up energy in the layer 2 space, I think.
Speaking of tokens, David, and pent up energy, go to CoinGecko and dude, sort the by 7
coins on the move this week are insane, bro. Okay, so last week Sora was released by ChatGPT, and all the internet like exploded about these like very realistic AI chat to video rendered.
But can we show that? Videos? Like these are awesome. This is a video.
They're very cool.
Woolly mammoths, and this is I was going to say obviously it's not. Woolly mammoths do not exist, so this couldn't even be possible, but it looks
like,
realistic.
You need to say that. Woolly mammoths don't exist. This is a fake video.
Or look at this one.
This is like the demo one. Yeah.
A city somewhere in Asia. I mean, it just looks so real. This is what
Sora
can do.
And this is V1. So people were comparing the video of Will Smith eating spaghetti, which was just like,
did you see that,
hilarious.
By the way?
It was like, yeah, it was chaotic. It was just, yeah, okay, here we go. Here's the comparison. And so these AI videos are just like blowing everyone's minds now, realizing that like, yo, if you're in like Hollywood, your job is threatened. If you're like everyone's whose like job is threatened is like freaking out right now. Meanwhile, non-coincidentally, Nvidia stock is like larger than the Chinese stock market. And then how does that impact the crypto markets? Because it does. WorldCoin, talking about the movers of the week, WorldCoin, the AI associated token that is associated with Sam Altman, up 180%, which is already a huge move. But the thing is, it is a fully diluted valuation of $86 billion.
Okay, I didn't see this one coming, but like, could WorldCoin be the thing that goes and flippins like
flippins Bitcoin Ethereum? fully diluted market cap?
Look, man, it's just behind Tether at this point. So it is the third largest chain in terms of fully diluted market cap right now.
Okay.
Can you
a lot of
that?
People say they fully diluted market cap is a meme, and like it's a valid perspective to have, but you also can't ignore it. The market cap of WorldCoin is 1.1 billion. The fully diluted valuation is 86 billion. That is the largest discrepancy between market cap and fully diluted valuation that the crypto markets have ever seen. There is so much selling pressure coming to this thing.
Why? Who's buying this? Why in the world would it? Like, I guess you're not buying and holding. You're just trading the narrative here.
This is turning into a meme coin.
It's a Sam Altman meme coin, isn't it?
It's a Sam Altman meme coin, yeah. And then the follow-ons on the other like movers of the week, again, massive movers of the week. SingularityNet, AGIX, cracked the top 100 tokens, up 120%, $900 million market cap. Fetch AI, up 60%. The Graph, which I think somehow got categorized as like an AI token, up 60%. Render, up 50%. Filecoin, up 30%. Arweave, up 27%. Filecoin and Arweave are like data for AI. That's kind of the meme narrative here. And like, I'm not cherry picking here. These are literally top 1 through 9 movers of the week are all AI coins. It's dumb. It's so dumb.
Big narrative trade energy right there. That's what's going on. But what's not dumb is Sora. That is so cool. By the way, you know this Will Smith thing? The second video is not a real video, by the way. I just point that out. Will Smith actually reenacted him doing the spaghetti thing. This is not AI generated. The second one is not.
Just so you know, David. Oh my God. Yeah. That's hilarious. Oh, that's really funny of him.
Yeah, it's awesome. Anyway,
wow.
He's trying to come back after the slap. You know, the slap incident. People haven't forgotten.
Yeah, he's got a lot of debts to pay on that one.
Let's go to
people on live television. Big
mistake. Yeah. Let's go to the Bitcoin ETF news on the week. Actually, before we get into that, one correction we have to make for journalistic integrity. Even though David, you know, we're not journalists.
I'm blaming this one on
you. this is my fault. I got a little excited about the Fidelity news last week. It is all true that Fidelity is including 1%. Of Bitcoin in some of its ETFs, upward to 3%. It's just only true for Canada.
Okay, so this is when we were talking about like the Fidelity 60/40 fixed income equity ETF portfolio that you could just buy and forget about. And there's a bunch of these portfolios. And we were talking about like, oh, and they're putting Bitcoin in them, which is true in Canada.
Yeah, we've got the fidelity.ca. The Canadians got me there. So it's just
Ryan
Canada
sometimes forgets that Canada is not the United States.
It's a different place. Because he's Canadian. Right? Yeah, for me, it's just like one country, right? America's right, attic. Right. But let's check in on the Bitcoin ETFs in general. This is a chart from Hill Dobby. And did you know, David, right now, Bitcoin ETFs, you include Grayscale because it's converted to ETF, 3.71% of Bitcoin supply. That's a lot. At some point, I actually get a little bearish about that number. I don't know what like double digits. You get to 25% like Bitcoin and ETFs. I don't know about that. I don't know how I feel about that.
This was always the destination of Bitcoin becoming wrapped inside of an ETF.
And central banks, central bank balance sheets, right?
Yeah, this was what what's his face? Who's our friend who called it Bitcoin jazz hands?
Ben Hunt. You talking
Ben,
about
Ben Hunt? Ben Hunt. Yeah. And it's like inside Bitcoin. This is like in the internal demand of Wall Street pulling 3.7% of Bitcoins from becoming outside money to inside money. It's now outside Bitcoins, which is most Bitcoins, and now we have 3.71% of inside Bitcoins inside the regulated Wall Street. Wall Street wants Bitcoins. So this is always without like a strong DeFi system. This is the destination of where Bitcoin becomes the most capitally efficient is inside
of an ETF. You're more into Bitcoin culture than I am. Like at that level,
which is funny because I own zero Bitcoin and you own Bitcoin.
Don't most sides of the Bitcoin spectrum, right? Like the spectrum you named, the filters and the people who want to build on Bitcoin, they both see this as kind of a good thing, right? They want Bitcoin in the hands of central bank balance sheet. That is the path to hyper Bitcoinization. It's all good. Who cares how much they own?
I think
right?
so. I think so. There's probably some nuances there, but yeah, I think they both agree with that.
Well, anyway, it's going up, and this is absorb Bitcoin supply. So if over the last 14 days, the amount of Bitcoin that ETFs have consumed, if that perpetuates for the entire year later, we would have about 9.1% Bitcoin supply in ETF. So Saylor's got a lot of catching up to do, David, if he's going to match these numbers.
No, Saylor's getting left in the dust. People's like gut reactions will be like, oh, the size of BTC ETF flows are only, it's like all going to happen at the very start and then it's going to be down. I wouldn't be so sure about that. I think we could sustain an equivalent, if not higher, level of flows, especially I think it's going to be really interesting post 6 months after approval, what these numbers kind of look like. So we got 5 months left before we get that. I think we could see some more tailwinds around 6 months, especially as number goes up and marketing around Bitcoin also goes up and FOMO on retail also goes up.
Here's what I kind of can't figure out is why in the world would you want to hold gold in an ETF when you can buy Bitcoin, right? Here's a tweet for Eric Balchunas. Speaking of killing the king, in the store of value category, the upstart Bitcoin ETFs, it's funny, Bitcoin ETF being an upstart, it is against gold. And the Bitcoin ETFs have gained $8.5 billion on gold ETFs in organic growth. So watch out, gold. Is that what that means? I mean,
yeah.
8.5 billion.
Gold has lost 3.6 billion. Bitcoin has gained 8.5 billion.
Like, think about our, like, millennials, think about Gen Z, even like Gen Xers. You think they're buying gold relative to Bitcoin?
No,
like, from an ETF perspective?
Who the hell is buying gold?
It just, like, it's just a dumb metal. It's a dumb yellow metal.
It's, and when we have legitimately a pet rock.
Anyway, we'll keep monitoring that. Coinbase had their earnings report last week. Some good news for the stock for sure. Do you want to give us the highlights?
Yeah, totally. So Coinbase just had a absolute stellar performance on their last quarter with a profit, $273 million. It turns out they did a lot of operational cutting and they ended up saving a lot of money, and they were still able to rake in a bunch more profit than what people expected. I think like the earnings per share came in way higher than expected. And so, yeah, they were able to reduce debt by $413 million, which we thoroughly enjoy. And then, yeah, their expected earnings per share was like 2 cents, and it ended up being like a dollar or something like that. It was like crazy, crazy good. And then Coin, the asset price, surged by 15% in after hours. And Coin is pushing up against, it's like $170 right now. It almost touched 200. But there's definitely some momentum around Coin for sure. And Coinbase did something very, very cool, which is you could actually mint the earnings, Coinbase earnings, as an NFT on Base, which I totally did because that's super cool. Did you mint this, Ryan?
I did. Yeah. You told me about it. Yeah. So I just went and I did it. I did it in Farcaster, actually. It was super easy.
I also did it in Farcaster. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool. What is the market cap of Coinbase now? Do you know that off the top of your head?
Let me look. I mean, in my Boomer Robinhood app, the market cap of Coinbase is $40.1
billion. $40
billion.
Okay. So cheap. I guess stack it cheap. About half a world coin then.
Half of a world coin.
All right. Well, let's talk about some more stocks that are up. Speaking of like old school tokens here, NVIDIA posts revenue of like they had a big quarter, basically. And NVIDIA stock increased.
They had a big quarter, but
much?
They also had very high expectations.
Yeah. And they exceeded those expectations.
$20.6 billion in revenue was expected. That was what analysts were coming to consensus around. Mm-hmm. And they actually reported $22 billion. So beating by $1.5 billion. So earnings per share, $4.6 expected. What they actually got is $5.16. Overall, the stock price went from 670. Ryan's laughing because I'm talking about boomer equity numbers. Yeah. Stock price went from $675 to $740 after hours. Total market cap of $1.7 trillion. Reminder, total crypto market cap, $2.06 billion. NVIDIA is not much behind the entire crypto market.
NVIDIA
cap.
Is basically one crypto.
It's one crypto.
Pretty much the same. I was also laughing because of this meme. Do you see this? It's like Atlas holding this giant ball, the world on his shoulders, the entire global economy, and NVIDIA is propping up right now. I think NVIDIA has been a huge reason why S&P and all the stock indexes are up. Like, that is the stock story right now. These
you
AI.
Can see the story of the AI bubble starting to form. Like, if you look left and right, like, what AI, like AI crypto tokens are up, NVIDIA is up, it's holding up the entire stock market. NVIDIA is now the seventh most valuable asset in the world, the fourth largest publicly traded company. Gold, by the way, is the most valuable asset in the world. Bitcoin is 10th. Ethereum 30th, behind Home Depot. Dumb.
Yeah, Home Depot. That's probably the most embarrassing one. Also, MasterCard. I feel like JP Morgan Chase. Once we flip in one of those big banks, that'll feel really good on the Ethereum
side. We need
side
to be higher. Ethereum ought to be higher than every single bank.
Look at this. You think NVIDIA is going to flip Apple and Microsoft?
Let's see. NVIDIA is $1.9 trillion. Apple is $2.8 trillion. If the AI bubble continues, for sure.
Microsoft has some of that tailwind though, right? With
totally.
Kind of open AI investment and everything that they're doing with AI, they get some of that too. So we'll have to see. Yeah. David, we're getting back to crypto. When we come back, what do we got coming up?
Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Starknet token. Was it the largest airdrop in history? We're going to unpack some of the numbers. Pudgy Penguins continue to not lose, just racking in the dubs. And then Eigenlayer collects $100 million from A16Z. We're going to talk about all of this and more, but first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible, especially Kraken. Where would we be without Kraken and their glorious charts guiding us through the weekly roll-up every single week? Thank you so much, Kraken. Let's go hear from them right now. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. It's everyone's favorite season in crypto, tax season. And crypto tax is always an absolute headache, especially for all you degens out there. But it doesn't have to be a nightmare. That's where Crypto Tax Calculator comes in, the software built for degens by degens. As Coinbase's official global tax partner, Crypto Tax Calculator focuses on making complex transactions into easy ones, supporting over 300,000 currencies across Ethereum, Arbitrum, Optimism, as well as 1,000 other integrations as well. It's as simple as connecting your wallet, pulling in all your transactions, and following the automated suggestions to quickly and accurately calculate your tax obligations. Plus, for all the airdrop farmers out there, Crypto Tax Calculator has your back, as they are consistently adding support for new and upcoming layer ones, layer twos, and all the airdrops that you're currently farming. 2024 is the year when the degens do their crypto taxes with speed and confidence. Make taxes this year easy and affordable with Crypto Tax Calculator. Sign up at CryptoTaxCalculator.io and get a 30% discount with code BANK30. Click the link in the show notes for more information. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be: secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities.
The Starknet token is now live. We said it was coming, and here it is. The question in my mind, David, is how big was this? Was this one of the largest or the largest airdrops in history? Let's get into it. Where should we start here, David?
728 million Starknet tokens out of 10 billion were airdropped to 1.3 million addresses. Over 400,000 wallets have already claimed. So we're going to see how many of those wallets are dead, but 400,000 wallets already breaks the number one spot in number of wallets claiming. Arbitrum used to be number one in that term. So when they were at 250,000 wallets, now the new high watermark is over 400,000 wallets. Depending on how you count the actual value being dropped, depending on the price that you put Starknet token at, Starknet, I think, does come in first. So Arbitrum dropped $1.5 billion to 250,000 wallets. If you count the Starknet token at current prices, it is equaling $1.5 billion. But it came in, the price of Stark token started at $3. And if you calculated that, then we're talking about like $2.5 billion. So I think Starknet now takes the number one, the high watermark for the largest airdrop in history.
Let's translate that into fully diluted valuation, kind of some market cap. Mm-hmm. So it's like 10 billion total supply. So when you say $3, just multiply that by 10, we get 30 billion. Right. Basically, right. When it dropped, and right now
at the moment of drop, but not very few people actually discovered liquidity, sold their tokens at that valuation. So okay, right now we are coming in at $18 billion fully diluted, and that would make our Starknet tied for first in value dropped to wallets. So it's somewhere between like the $2.5 to $1.5 million dropped to wallets.
Of course, not much in terms of circulating supply. What do we have? Like, is it under 10%, around 10%?
Yeah, it's like 7 to 8% of the total supply of Starknet token is circulating, which is relatively low.
but from a fully diluted valuation perspective, where does that stack up? Maybe let's take a quick look at that. So maybe comparing it. No, let's not compare it to WorldCoin. That would be sad. Let's compare it to some of the other layer twos. So Arbitrum is still a little bit ahead, at least at the time of recording, but they're kind of neck and neck. So Arbitrum is 18.5 billion. And then Starknet would be the second most valuable layer two out there at 18.3. After that, you have to scroll a little bit down and you see Optimism at 15.7, and then keep scrolling. Am I missing anything? Matic. So that'd be Polygon
Matic
at 9.7.
Matic is lagging the market so hard.
It really is right now. So what do you think? Do you think that like this is a rational valuation, or like what's your take on Starknet versus these other layer twos?
In terms of valuation, I'm going to like, people are like kind of poking fun at Starknet for having such a low amount of total locked value inside of Starknet, saying like the amount of total locked value in Starknet doesn't match the actual the fully diluted valuation. There's something like $110 million in value inside of Starknet. But like, you're kind of like judging these things against like Arbitrum or Optimism. But that's not like the best way to compare these things, because these are different roll-up constructions that are meant to do different things. Starknet is really about like a lot of compute, not necessarily a lot of DeFi. While they do want DeFi, they also want like things like fully on-chain games. And fully on-chain games aren't really going to take in a lot of TVL. Anyways, it's like judging a fish how to climb a tree. But like at the same time, you still get to make that call. I will like to check back in on the fully diluted valuation of Starknet after there is this unlock period for investors, which is coming very soon. In April, 13% of the total supply, $2.6 billion at current prices, is going to be unlocked to team investors.
An additional
13%.
So we've got like 7% unlocked right now, at least according to token unlocks.
So it's gonna jump to like 20%. And the Starknet people will say like, oh yeah, these are long-term oriented investors. They definitely want to help the network. I'm like, yeah, you guys gotta say that. some people are up very, very bigly in paper gains. And when
it's
there
just
are
responsible.
A lot of people up in paper gains, like it's hard to not sell that.
Yeah. And like for any VC, it's what these unlocks are coming from, primarily VCs and teams, right? Mm-hmm. They got to sell some portion of that, or else they're not being fiduciarily responsible to their LPs, I would say. So yeah, you're right. We got to get through that gauntlet. And when does that happen again, David?
Starts in April. Token.unlocks.app is a great place to check all token unlocks, especially as we progress through this bull market and we are having a lot of high, fully diluted valuation, low float tokens come into the market. Definitely get into the practice of checking your unlock schedules. And there's a link in the show notes, token.unlocks.app, in order to check your supply schedules.
Yeah, speaking of checking things, you got to go, if you are a bankless citizen, you got to be using the Bankless app for this. So we did some analytics on our side. You know, we have our Airdrop Hunter project that basically shows you the quests in order to be potentially, hopefully eligible for airdrops. David, we had
our best guess for becoming eligible. Yeah.
About 8,000 users of the Bankless app using Airdrop Hunter and our Claimables product were eligible for this drop. And so our citizens in particular, they received an average of $1,400 per individual. Mm. This is the time to go check out those quests. Add your address to the Bankless Claimables app. And actually, for our podcast listeners, David, to celebrate maybe the biggest airdrop that we have seen yet in crypto, we've got a code. Podcast24 gets you 10% off a Bankless citizenship subscription forever. There's a link in the show notes. Man, now's the time to be doing things on chain and establishing
this thing
your
on-chain
profile.
Is supposed to pay for itself. We are designing this thing to pay for itself.
That's kind of working. So,
some people got $1,400 on this one token drop.
You ready for the hard pivot, David? We're going to move from token drops to penguin drops.
All right, let's do it.
Pudgy Penguins, round two. Walmart just did a massive reorder of Pudgy Penguin NFT toys. What's going on here?
Yeah, so of course, Pudgy, the plushies of Pudgies, got put into Walmart like half a year ago, 6 months ago, which was just a massive, just landmark thing for the NFT industry. And Walmart is doubling down. They're doing again. They're putting in another order for more Pudgies to go into more stores. 3,100 Walmart stores across the United States. And of course, these are the same plushies as before. Now there's just even more of them. Reminder, every single toy comes with access to Pudgy World, which is their on-chain gaming experience that they are building. And so these are just like thousands and thousands of people are buying like these first items and their first access onto Pudgy World, it's built on ZK Sync. It's one of their ZK Sync Hypernet chains. And Walmart is saying like, oh yeah, we're ready to like double down on this relationship. We're going to sell more of these things.
You know, what's going to be wild, David, is like you could actually justify like airdrop questing, airdrop hunting by buying one of these plush toys
one of the reasons I think why they're selling out is because all these crypto degens are going and filling up their shopping carts with all these plushie coins.
Yes, toys. Because let's just connect the dots here, right? ZK Sync has not released a token, have they? Right. And each toy comes with a Pudgy World on-chain experience NFT. Uh-huh. Go do that. Establish your on-chain profile for ZK Sync using Pudgy, right? Will an airdrop happen as a result of this? I don't know. Who knows? But go look at history, right?
Right.
Like you could just, and then you could imagine, I'm sure there are some crypto degens sort of playing this game. I'm sure there's also a lot of kids who just see a cute penguin. They buy a penguin. Right. And then they're going to get a big tax liability at some point in time. Can you imagine? Buying a Pudgy toy and you receive X amount of value in an airdrop.
I just love all of these like super young Zoomers, and then even the generation that's not even named yet, the kids, like the elementary school, middle school kids who are like buying these plushies because they just want the stuffed animal, and then they discover that there's this Pudgy World thing, and of course they're going to go play it, and then they're just going to like receive, I don't know, a couple $1,000 from the ZK Sync airdrop, and crazy. Then they go to their parents, and their parents are going to be like, what the shit is happening on the internet? What's going on?
Well, that's just one possible future. Who knows? Maybe a lot of people are probably just buying it for the cuteness here. Here's Luca standing in front of Walmart. We had him on the podcast. Did we release that last week? Luca Nets.
Yeah, that episode's out. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. You know what?
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's doing pretty well with his project. Pudgy briefly flipped the apes this week.
Oh, briefly, is it not over it?
I don't know at the time of recording. This is, where should I go? NFT floor?
I'm looking it up. Oh, you're right. Yeah. Okay. So current price floor for Bored Ape Yacht Club, 22 ETH, Pudgy, 19.5 ETH. You're right. Pudgies did briefly flip Bored Ape, but they are not currently number three. I'm rooting for them.
Yeah. You prefer the penguins.
I prefer the penguins. Yeah. I own neither and I prefer the penguins.
Yeah, you think the penguins are coming for the crypto punks? Will you
dude,
be
the penguins
excited
say
about
that they're coming for the crypto punks? That's what they would want.
So far unseated. Well, actually, no. Apes flipped punks cycle, didn't
apes
they?
Were above punks time. For like a year straight. Yeah,
yeah. Punks are a bear market asset. You got a bunch of holders in the punks community. Yeah.
A high price floor. As soon as Ethereum becomes cool again, punks are gonna moon.
All right, what's next?
Coming up next, the Athena mainnet drop. We're going to talk all about that. The SEC gets sued. Circle's going after Tether. Yuga Labs acquires Proof, and Eigenlayer points get tokenized, but not by Eigenlayer. We're going to talk about all of this and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses Eigenlayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at @0xmantle. Are you launching a token? Is it already live? How are you managing the legal and tax obligations for providing token grants to your team? It's no secret that token management gets complicated. Between learning all the legal language and tax obligations in every country that your team is in, token grant management can feel like an obstacle course. But it doesn't have to. That's where Toku steps in. Toku provides practical tools to handle token grants, allowing for effective oversight of token distributions and payroll tax compliance for employees, contractors, advisors, and investors. They also handle tax withholding through their real-time tax calculations that can be done by Toku or integrated into any payroll EOR providers in any jurisdiction. Toku is a trusted provider of Protocol Labs, DYDX Foundation, Mina Protocol, and many more. Get started for free and make token compensation simple at toku.com/bankless. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world. Driving real-world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi, and with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest-growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now, Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer two. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo layer two to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo layer two will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo layer two, gas fees will stay low and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums, follow Celo on Twitter, and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
A16Z has invested $100 million into Eigenlayer. I guess it was a new fundraising round for Eigenlayer, which was a one-of-one by A16Z. Makes a ton of sense to me. And so undisclosed valuation as to what Eigen Labs raised at. But to me, this makes a lot of sense, Ryan. A16Z's got a fantastic crypto research team. There's a lot of research left to be done about restaking and AVSs and what even all of the total products could be built on Eigenlayer. A16Z is kind of in it for the long run. And then I thought this was kind of cute in the actual article announcing this raise. The definition of, do you know what the definition of Eigen is? It's a German word.
I actually don't. What does Eigen mean?
So Eigenlayer means your own layer, as in like build your own layer.
Okay.
Build your own layer workshop. And so, you know, Eigen and then own your as in own? Like, yeah, exactly. And then own as in read, write, own. So I thought that was cute. Anyways, like A16Z has just fantastic connections into like Silicon Valley, into the software as a service sector, into like Capitol Hill and the political landscape, and also Wall Street. There's extremely legitimizing in Wall Street, and so I think A16Z is like the perfect VC firm to take Eigenlayer's relationships and just like weight to the next level. I think this is like Eigenlayer is like swinging for the fences. I think they're going big. They're going for as big as they can get, which makes sense because they are doing something. They are exploring a frontier that is brand new to all of crypto and actually allows crypto to escape beyond some of its like internal infrastructure stuff.
How much ETH is in Eigenlayer right now?
$8 point something billion.
So what would that be like? Would that be like close to 2 to 3 million in terms of supply? ETH supply?
Oh, ETH supply? Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, we're just looking at layer twos. Layer twos have 10.
7.8 billion in Eigenlayer. 7.8 billion. And then what is that in ETH terms? Approaching three.
I mean, that would be quite the flippening if at some point in time the amount of Ether in terms of supply or you know, like value, whatever, dollar value, flips the amount of Ether in layer twos. That'd be very interesting. Not saying it could happen, but.
Well, like Eigenlayer will be able to actually increase the productivity and the utility of layer twos. So there's going to be some symbiosis here because you're going to be able to take like Eigenlayer LST tokens. Renzo actually announced this last week that you can mint Easy ETH, the Renzo liquid restaking Ether token. You can mint it natively on layer twos. And so that will actually count for both Ether in Eigenlayer and on layer twos.
Well, people are going crazy for Eigen points right now, and including, I guess, A16Z through their purchase. But KelpDAO is doing something interesting. They are issuing synthetic Eigen points, introducing KEP, which is Kelp Earned Points. What is this?
Mm-hmm. basically, it is a claim on an Eigen point that KelpDAO is earning from all of their ETH deposited into EigenLayer. So basically, they have tokenized EigenLayer points that they have in their, like, quote unquote treasury. And so now, like, restakers will be able to transfer and trade their earned points as tokens on Ethereum. I cannot believe we just tokenized points.
Well, but it's interesting because they are definitely not in control over, like, the minting of points or the supply of points or anything.
There's
no
settlement assurances. There's no property rights around points. So in theory, EigenLayer would be like, we're yoinking your guys' points. Like, there's technically nothing stopping EigenLayer from doing that.
Right. They could basically say, hey, anyone who... like anyone with cap just doesn't get points, right? If they wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah. Points are not, if you're listening to our points episode, points are not a smart contract. There's no contract about points. They are a number in a database that can be changed at will by the issuing entity. So Kelp is just like taking a gamble that EigenLayer is not going to like mess with their points.
Good old fashioned social contract. We'll see how that works out. Athena mainnet. What is Athena, David? I have not been following this.
Athena is a new stablecoin, a USDE stablecoin that is created via this pretty novel mechanism. It is created via yield on two sides of a trade. One is the yield of staked ETH, and then the other is the yield of funding rates from people who are paying to go short Ether in a leveraged fashion. So you slap these two yields together, you can earn them at the same time, and then this trade kind of trades out. So it's a delta neutral hedging trade that produces yield as a result. If I was better at DeFi, I would have a better way to explain that. But basically, this is how this works. We should probably do a show on this. It's generating some hype for sure. It's also generating some controversy just because, like, there's a lot of yield that is being advertised here, like over 20%. And that is like triggering people's PTSD from Terra Luna.
Yield on what? On like a dollar, right? So this is what they're producing here is an ether based synthetic dollar that's offering like 27% APY. All right.
Right.
And when you see a dollar representation that's offering like close to 30% APY, you immediately go back to, how is that possible? Where's the yield coming from? Is
Anchor
this real?
Protocol on Terra Luna is
another
like
algo
stablecoin. Like,
yeah. People get freaked out about this, but it's generating the yield in a different way. How would you describe it?
Right. Well, kind of what I said. So you have the yield of staked ETH, from Lido staked ETH, and then you also have the yield from funding rates that people are paying to short Ether. And you get both of these things. And the actual mechanism for how that flows into the dollar, I'm not totally sure. I need to brush up on this. But like, it checks out. It does check out. There are plenty of risks in this system. There's a bunch of dependencies. A lot of this capital is on centralized exchanges, and so that's a risk. This is not a decentralized stablecoin. It is a stablecoin. It's not decentralized. It's a pretty cool experiment, and this experiment just hit mainnet, and now that's kind of like what the news is, and everyone's kind of reacting to it.
I think we do not have time to explore all of the risks or get into that today, certainly, but there'll be some links in the show notes, and then maybe expect an upcoming Bankless podcast in this category.
Are we committing to that?
I think we should. This is a new source of yield. We got to find out.
This is how we invite
exactly
people onto
from.
The Bankless podcast. We say we're going to do a podcast about them. All them <roll up.
laughs> This is Anthony Sasana, who has backed this project. I assume he's an angel investor. He said, I'm very glad to see lots of people questioning Athena's design, asking how they can offer the 20% plus yield and also exploring what all of the risks are. This is a very different to last cycle where people questioning things were the minority. So he's just making the point that it's good that people are asking this question.
It's healthy. Well done. If you are skeptical, well done. Good job.
You did a good
job. Thank you. We're all becoming more mature. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. No one's encouraging you to ape into this. You definitely have to understand it first. David, this was big news in the NFT sphere. So Yuga Labs acquired Kevin Rose's project Proof and all of the owls that go with it. What happened here?
So all of the IP, the Proof Collective, the Moon Birds, the Oddities, Mythics, and Grails, all of the things owned by Proof is now owned by Yuga Labs. And so there's a handover period, and Kevin Rose will now become an advisor to the Proof company. And so basically handing over control of all of Proof's assets over to Yuga Labs, which Yuga Labs has done this before. They acquired the Meebits and CryptoPunks IP, and I think something else as well. But yeah, this is definitely inside of the Yuga Labs like business model.
How did the punks, like, was that a good thing for CryptoPunks overall? Would you say
Yuga Labs? No change in price. No change in price.
No change in price. Any change in kind of culture or utility, or did they do anything?
No, there is no way to harness CryptoPunk culture. We're a decentralized cohort of holders.
I think the price of Moonbirds went up after this. So
yeah, and then
it
went down. Then it went down. I think it's overall unchanged. Just kidding. I'm wrong. It went from one ETH to two ETH. So Moonbirds doubled actually in valuation.
But down from all-time highs significantly, right? And I think...
Turns out the mint price was 2.5 ETH. So below the mint price.
The mint price. And then Moonbirds absolutely skyrocketed. So there's been a lot of negative reaction in the NFT community and even in the Moonbirds community. Here's a tweet thread from Adam Hollander saying, "I effing hate this." Saying that Moonbirds was mismanaged, as it was a mess, and they didn't follow through on their promises. So
wouldn't you be a fan of new management then?
I don't know. It depends what management does
Moonbirds
with it.
As a cohort, Moonbird holders as a cohort have been dissatisfied. I think maybe there was like very high expectations with how high Moonbird's price went, but like the vibe is like people are dissatisfied, but then we're getting new management. So don't we want that?
I don't know. I mean, it depends what the new management does with it. If they do what Luca did with the Penguins, that would be incredible. If they don't,
I'd actually rather have Luca buy them.
Well, I think Luca's got his handful with his Penguin community.
One last airdrop to talk about: Optimism, the fourth Optimism airdrop. This one for $37 million. This was announced on February 21st. Optimism Collective recently announced its fourth airdrop, specifically targeting artists and creators in the Optimism ecosystem. 223,000 addresses with eligibility criteria based on engagement and creativity of artists. Anyone who deployed NFT contracts on the Ethereum Layer 1, Base, OP Mainnet, and Zora before January 10th, and I think perhaps also interacted with these same NFT contracts. And so this actually might be a sneaky one. We minted some NFTs, some podcast NFTs. We got how much money did we get? We got like $700 or maybe $1,200 from this. Had no idea without our own Claimables product.
Yeah,
so
that's
thank
right.
you. Thank you, Bankless Claimables, for making sure that we actually know our own airdrops, and that goes for you as well. So make sure that you are plugging in your addresses just in case you got this Optimism airdrop.
You just want to get an alert because these are like perpetual airdrops, right? It's like, and I think many layer twos and many airdrop like kind of communities with tokens will continue to do this. And so sometimes you just don't know. You got a present, you know, you got something in your ETH address. David, let's talk about the people versus the SEC. So
I love these words.
The crypto lawyers were pretty excited about this. Last week, what happened?
So there is a crypto exchange called Legit Exchange, which is suing the SEC, I think preemptively, trying to ensure that all future tokens that they list and trade on their exchange will not be sales of securities. So they intend to facilitate the sale of crypto assets, the exchange of crypto assets on their exchange. And they are asking a court to order that the secondary market sales of digital assets are not the sales of securities, and also declare that Legit Exchange does not need to register with the SEC as an exchange broker or clearinghouse, and will also thirdly prevent the SEC from bringing an enforcement action against Legit Exchange and similarly situated CFAT members, basically saying, hey, SEC, we saw what you've done to Coinbase. We saw what you've done to Kraken. We are going to get a court to declare that what we are doing is Gucci and you guys cannot sue us.
This is a preemptive strike, right? We're going to sue you before you sue us, right? Yeah. This is Amanda goes on. To be clear, this is the first time that a crypto market participant has proactively sued the SEC. We are now suing the SEC.
I love it.
Which is great. I mean the crypto community, not David and myself, although we would if we could. Of their project.
Give me a reason.
And pre anything by the SEC. Plaintiffs are not looking for money. They're not looking for money, David, or mm-hmm. any reward.
They're just looking for a statement.
Legal clarity. Like, can we yeah. run this business? Because it seems like we should in the law. And so they're asking the court to give them clarity here. I actually, like, this is Jake Travinsky's take on it. Crypto goes on the offensive in the courts. Mm-hmm. That's why it's a big deal. This lawsuit proactively challenges the SEC's unlawful attempt to seize power over digital asset markets that has no authority to regulate. David, I had no idea we could just go sue the SEC. That's great news. And so I asked all the crypto lawyers on crypto Twitter, like, how about we just launch a class action lawsuit against the SEC on behalf of American citizens and retails for the millions of dollars in missed token airdrops that we didn't get because we live in America.
Billions.
Did I say millions?
To have claimed my Celestia tokens, Gary, but I did not. I don't have any Celestia tokens because of Gary Gensler.
Right. So I tweeted this out and I asked, hey, is that a dumb idea, crypto lawyers? Is this like possible? Mm-hmm. And a whole bunch of Twitter responses were like, yeah, I'd join that class action lawsuit. I would join that class.
I would love to, yes.
I missed DYDX tokens, Celestia tokens. All of these things. It probably cost me tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. I would jump in.
Can we bankrupt the SEC?
I would love to, right?
I would love that.
Okay. Well, apparently Jake Travinsky says, not your lawyer. Here's the thing. They have this thing called sovereign immunity, David, which is if you are a government regulator, you have sovereign immunity. It's your trump card. So we're not able to involve them in a civil case like this, unfortunately.
Oh, wait, you got my hopes up. What the shit is this?
He said there's still a chance, though, David. Jake Travinsky, he again, not your lawyer, is not legal advice. Right. I'm sure he'd want us to say that, but you'd have to talk to your own lawyer to analyze whether this is possible. I'd like to think the legal system would find a way to deliver justice in a case like this, but the principles of equity only go so far. TLDR probably don't. That's probably not a good idea, unfortunately.
Damn it. I know. Well, that was a fun little segment then.
We tried, though.
I got something else that's pretty fun.
Yeah, go for it.
Where in the world is Do Kwon? Do you remember?
Last I checked, it was Montenegro and then back to South Korea. Am I remembering this correctly? Wasn't he in South Korea?
No. So South Korea and the United States have been fighting over Do Kwon for extradition.
Oh, they both want him.
We both want because he's a South Korean citizen, also an American citizen, maybe, but mainly her.
I know he went
American
to
investors.
Berkeley, so he lived
in Stanford. I think he went to Stanford.
One of those.
Yeah. Anyways, he is going to be extradited to the United States. It's about damn time. He has been in Montenegro since his arrest in March of 2023. And so he's coming home. Do Kwon, coming home on shore.
Wow. What's going to happen? I mean, will this be an SBF style court case? Are we in for something like that? It won't be as big a deal, I'm sure. It won't have the immediate fanfare, but
there's less like dirt to like dig up. And yeah, but like I would love to see some of the internal conversations inside of like the Terra Luna Slack, for example, or whatever they used.
You know, one of my reactions to this is if the US wants you, like the US is the boss of global finance. Right. If they want you for financial crimes, they always get you.
They get you.
Right. Yep, like people are extradited from all over the world. Outside, maybe if you live like Russia and China, there's no such thing as jurisdictions. It's just the US.
Can I bring up something that's actually pretty adjacent to this, but still relevant?
Yeah.
I think this is worthwhile to know. This is a very big deviation side quest. Okay. Did you know that China sold AI technology to Iran? And Iran has extradited a German-Iranian citizen using AI facial recognition technology to find him. And they extradited him from Germany to Iran and is going to be executed in Iran.
Wait, are you serious? Wait, so I lost the train here. So there's China, there's a German citizen, and Iran.
Right, okay. So China AI technology purchased by Iran.
Okay.
Iran uses that AI technology to identify a German Iranian dual citizen living in Germany. That German citizen is being extradited to Iran and is set to be executed.
Why? What did this German citizen do? What are the charges?
Crimes against the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So are you...
I thought
who's
would,
liable
like,
for that? Why? What made you think of this?
AI is like being talked about all over the place. We had Vitalik on to talk about like defensive accelerationism and how like AI can be used in a very offensive capacity. And then we're just seeing like you know, AI is starting to become governments like an authoritarian tool. I thought this was far more theoretical.
Yeah.
And I definitely appreciate Vitalik's foresight here. Had no idea that this was actually already being done in practice.
This is the reason that these power structures are kind of important and impressed upon me. Is like the reason we are fighting so hard in the US is because the US is really important because they're like the mob boss of global finance. Mm-hmm. All right. So like, where do you go? If you like, I'm not going to China. I'm not going to Russia. Yeah, yeah. Do I go somewhere in Europe? Well, like that's under the arm of the US financial powers as well.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important to like
fight
it where we are.
There's also been like this balkanization going on inside of Web3. Like Circle is now no longer issuing USDC on Tron. We're going to talk about Tether and Circle here in a second, but just like this fears of influence are like becoming firmer and they are permeating through Web3. Well, and AI is helping accelerate that.
Let's get right to that story. So this actually surprised me this week. This is Circle's, one of Circle's VPs of policy, Caroline Hill. The caption from this tweet is really begging to Congress for the Treasury Department to go after Tether and their banking partner. This is a US-based banking partner, Cantor Fitzgerald. So this is Caroline Hill in front of Congress this week. Let's play the clip.
This is Circle in front of Congress.
I personally believe that no company should be allowed to reference the US dollar without having those democratic values inside the company, inside their US dollar-backed stablecoin. And so I think if Treasury thinks that it needs additional authorities to go over that, then I think this committee should consider that.
So to those US touch points, US financial services company Cantor Fitzgerald reportedly manages Tether's $72 billion portfolio of Treasury bonds, giving him access to US dollars. Cantor's enabling of terror and illicit activities across the globe is unacceptable. Ms. Hill, given Tether's nexus to the U.S. financial system through Cantor Fitzgerald, does Treasury already have the authority to take action? And what should we be doing about American-regulated companies like Cantor?
I would think that the Treasury Department would have the authority to take action given this U.S. touch point, yes. And I hope that they're looking at this seriously given Tether's reputation as well as the data that we've seen that they're contributing to terrorist financing.
Okay,
yeah.
So let's unpack that a little bit. So this is somebody who works for Circle, of course. So this is USDC and they're in front of Congress. There's somebody from Coinbase as well there. I don't know what the Coinbase representative said, but sort of corroborated some of the things that Circle said. And they basically are advocating that Treasury, US Treasury, go after Cantor Fitzgerald, which is one of the brokerages that hold Tether's T-bills, essentially, because they are saying that Tether is not compliant with AML KYC, right? They're not compliant with kind of the regulations. Now, that is quite the charge because Tether.
Quite the charge.
David, you weren't on the episode because you were on a flight on your way to ETH Denver, I believe. But I talked to Tether CEO Paulo about this, and I brought up this commentary, and his perspective was, we are fully compliant, we freeze addresses all of the time, we like mint funds.
Not only do they freeze addresses, but they freeze addresses quickly. There are more blacklisted Tether addresses than there are Circle addresses.
Right. He's like that. We work directly with financial surveillance authorities, like, you know, the full posse of everybody's looking at this, like Chainalysis and also the FBI. And so he's like, they are maligning us because they're trying to cut us out. This is, he says that this is a form of kind of regulatory capture, right? You know, Tether's
this
offshore.
This is 100% regulatory capture. This is the game that Circle has been playing, like for better or for worse. They're the compliant onshore Circle stablecoin.
Yep.
And they're trying to like brand Tether as the uncompliant offshore. They are offshore. They are totally compliant by as far
as I can tell, two comments here below this video, one from Zach XBT saying Treasury Department should investigate Circle for all the times they did not blacklist illicit funds when they had ample time instead of LARPing as the compliant centralized stablecoin. And then also Bantag saying disgraceful. She just mad Tether blocks stolen funds within 10 minutes while her company replies a week after they've been laundered dry. Yow, some zingers coming in from crypto Twitter. This is 100% a narrative game that I'm not sure stands up.
Yeah, I don't love regulatory capture attempts, and that's what this kind of seems like. I hope USDC and Tether kind of fight it out in, you know, like the free market way, but it looks like they're going here. You know, the stablecoin wars are continuing for sure. Oh, related to that, by the way, it's not clear that it's related. It seems related to me. Circle says we are discontinuing USDC support on Tron, the Tron blockchain. So, you know, there was about $300 million worth of USDC on Tron. Mm-hmm. So a very small amount compared to Tether, 51 billion Tether on Tron. So I asked Paulo about this and he said, yeah, they're leaving because they lost. That was his take on it.
This is more like a virtue signal than anything.
But
there's not that much Circle. And also they're implying that there's a bunch of nefarious activity on Tron, so they can't be there. They're trying to make it up as a branding win.
That's why it feels like it's kind of related, because Tron is like, and Tether are like in sort of the, you know, the evil axis, the sketchy. And they are, maybe they're not. It's just like... these are the kinds of games that are being played at this stage in the market.
These are the kind of dirty games. I don't like it.
All right. Well, let's get to raises on the week. This is a Bankless Ventures company that raised this week. So David and I, obviously, we think it's cool. We're adding it to our disclosures page. It's called Init Capital. What is Init Capital, David?
Yeah, and it is a money market on top of the Mantle layer 2. You know, Uniswap V4 hooks, where you have the base Uniswap liquidity and then you have hooks for expressiveness on top of that. Take that same pattern and think of Init as like Compound or Aave with liquidity hooks on top of Init. So more expressiveness on top of capital. So you have this base level of capital inside of the Init money market. And then people can build hooks to add more, you know, apps on top of the Init money market. And so, like, what could a hook do? You could do leverage staking. You could do LST looping. You could do pair trading, margin trading. And so think of just like, you know, a base of a compound platform, money market, and then just like apps, like maybe Yearn strategies, for example, or just any kind of app that can be built on top of Init. Pretty cool innovation. We like the team. Congrats on the raise.
David, last thing before we get to the meme of the week. I don't know if you saw this, the Reddit plan. So,
this is dad time. I'm getting ready.
Okay. Oh, it was cool. Okay, so this is a dad segment. It's not too dad, but it's kind of like I thought it was interesting. So here's why. So Reddit is getting ready to IPO. I know you're a Reddit user. I've been a Reddit user. In the past.
Former Reddit user.
Yeah, no, I used a lot less user. Now. Now I'm more of a kind of a consumer. They're going public. Yeah. Okay. And this was big news in TradFi this week. So outside of crypto, basically Reddit is planning to reserve a yet undetermined number of shares for 75,000 of its most prolific so-called Redditors. This is the content creators, the mods, you know, the people that really power Reddit. Mm-hmm. And they're going to reserve 75,000 shares. At first I thought, oh, well, that sounds like an airdrop. When you look into it, what they're actually reserving, it's more like an allow list, David. They're allowing the first, these 75,000, like recipients of like Reddit points, let's call it maybe, they are allowed to purchase the IPO at the IPO price. That's basically it. And it's interesting to me, like, first of all, I guess, good on Reddit for doing something, getting off zero. Right. I mean, Facebook, like... Twitter, none of these companies have actually rewarded the content creators in their network in any way. And so at least some allow list participation, that's something. Of course, Reddit users, if they buy the IPO and stock price goes down, they could lose. These 75,000 could certainly lose. It's costing money. Well, they could win if it goes up after the IPO price. But wow, imagine trying this in crypto, right? In crypto, like users are demanding airdrops. If we are working inside of a network and the network does not provide rewards for the work that we are doing, whether it's an Ethereum staker or whether you're contributing to like a network as a user or a content creator, we'll just leave. We'll go to the network that does give us that. And so What I think is going to be interesting to observe over the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, let's say, is I think crypto is really going to move the social Overton window of like requiring some of these established Web2 companies to give to their main users, their content creators, basically like the journalists, you know, and the curators who make it all possible. They'll have to move in that direction because I think those creators, those users will start to demand upside and crypto will be a forcing function to that. So sometimes I see the, you know, outstretched hand of gimme airdrop. We talked a little bit about that. And sometimes I see entitlement, and that's true. There are some entitled people who just want airdrops for doing nothing. On the other hand, another way to reframe that is, at least we're pushing the Overton window towards forcing companies like social network companies.
Wealth distribution towards the long tail. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. So that was the take here. And like,
love it.
Kind of a crappy airdrop though. Just allows.
I wonder how much of this is constrained by just regulations.
Can
they actually just give away equity? Probably not. They probably can't.
You're right, David. So, I'm sure you're right.
This is not them just like, oh, we'll allow like our Redditors to buy our bags. No, like I don't think the SEC will allow them to do anything more creative than that.
Yeah. And that's why we have to push on this on the technology side too, and push on the regulatory side. David, we've got a meme of the week. What are we looking at this week?
This is our meme. And so I actually don't know. I think maybe our graphic designer at Bankless made this. So coming to a Walmart near you, we have two action figures, male crypto podcaster. This one's me. And here's Ryan, Ethereum podcaster. I got crypto podcaster. You got Ethereum podcaster.
Yeah.
Highly detailed. Look at your jawline, bro.
Yeah.
That's a good looking jawline.
That is not real life.
You're looking like Superman.
Yeah.
I look like Ken. You look like Superman.
Well, Walmart's a good place for these, David. So move aside, penguins. We're going to be there too. Got to end with this. Of course, you can find all of our disclosures at bankless.com/disclosures at any time. And risks and disclaimers. You know, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. Not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.